The song is called Universe Communion. It's by my guest, Stuart Davis, from his album Something Simple. And if you know your UFO literature, you can pick out their references to the Dogon tribe. Or maybe you're a fan of writer Tom Robbins, who's written about the tribe. And he always writes about synchronicities and connections, everything being connected in the Tom Robbins books. If you don't know his stuff, you should check it out. It's sort of the same theme that we're exploring tonight with Stuart. There are still some chapters to be told, twists and turns about his Mantis saga, and we'll be right back with more. In this tale, Man Meets Mantis, there are some several really weird synchronicities, odd coincidences. One of them happens to Fiona. I think she's your producer, Stuart. She has a dream.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Tell us about her dream.
Oh, this is one of the weirdest parts of the whole thing. So, as I mentioned, and I do want to just do a quick shout out to John Mack, because as you played that song in the segments in between there, that's how I actually met John, was that song. I had dedicated it to him on a record, and you know, he ushered me into this range of mysteries in a very positive way, you know, invited me to conferences and stuff. So it was fun to hear that. And it also ties into the dream that Fiona had, because since I was a teenager, you know, the first that I can remember these items was when I was a teenager. I have a scoop mark scar in my left leg, and I have a bump in my right shoulder that has always bothered me in a very strange way. It's about the size of a BB. I've never told anyone about it, but I have, because of, you know, knowing abductees and knowing the lore around these range of phenomena, it's always bothered me, and I've had a kind of uneasy relationship with this object that's in my right shoulder. But I've never even told my wife about this. So my producer on the film Mantis, whose name is Fiona, and she features prominently in the doc, one morning she wakes up and tells me that she had a dream that I have an implant in my right shoulder, precisely in the place where I actually do have this object in my right shoulder. And she goes on to relate a set of symbols which were in the dream, and I actually have had her generate the artwork which depicts those symbols, and I have that as well. And that is definitely a watermark in this series of experiences that scared the crap out of me. I mean, when she said that to me, I just felt like I had been transgressed. I didn't even really have a good name or description for what the emotions are that came with it, but it was inexplicable and totally bizarre. And if you can imagine it coming on the tail of all of those insect synchronicities and then the strange anomalies that we're having over my house, and then she has this dream where she identifies an implant where I actually have an object in my shoulder. And she says in this dream it was clear to her that it was of alien origin of some kind. Now, I have no recollection consciously of any experiences. I've never seen any other UFOs other than what's recounted in this doc. I don't have any strange, you know, foggy memories of any other entities or encounters in my life. But I was scared witless by her identifying this thing. And so when I told her, I actually do have an object in my shoulder. And later, when I saw her in person, when we were working on the film, I put her finger right on it and said, here it is, feel it. It's plain as day. You would not miss it. So that event was one that pushed me into a new decisive point with this, where I decided, like, I need to start taking action about this. I need to do something. I can't just sit back and be a passive recipient of all this strange stuff. I want to have some sort of agentic role in it. So I began meditating on my rooftop deck. And this is another hilarious part of this phenomena to me in a very scary way. I just tried to work up my bravery, and I started waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. My logic was, okay, if these anomalies are going to show up between 3 and 3:30 every morning, I'm just going to wake up and go onto my rooftop deck, and I'm going to meditate, and I'm going to wait for them. I'm going to try to call that UFO back. I'm going to try to call the mantis back. And I begin meditating on my rooftop deck every night, and everything stops. That's it. Nothing happens. I end up doing that for long enough that I I give up. I'm like, oh, this is clearly not going to work. It's actually had the inverse effect. So then I go back to sleeping in my house. And when I go back to sleeping in my house, I have the next series of nocturnal anomalies, which my wife experienced with me and is in the doc. And we wake up, and this time, instead of a tuning fork, it is a hearing test. And it's the same hearing test that I had all through my youth because of the ear infections and the surgeries. I had dozens and dozens of hearing tests. It's one of those things that got burned into my body through those developmental fulcrums. And now it's doing the same thing the tuning fork was doing. It's just hovering over my house, and I am getting so fed up with this. You know, I get my wife out of bed. I confirm she's hearing exactly what I'm hearing. I'm like trying to convince her to come out on the deck with me, trying to get my dog. No one will do it. I won't do it. I'm too afraid to go out there on my own. And that is the point where I flip and the shaman that you mentioned comes into the picture. Because after I was so repeatedly afraid to go out on the deck and just encounter this thing, whatever it was, these sounds above the house, which actually the sounds themselves are very discreet and clear. I'm not confused about what they were, but the source of them was never anything visible. So I said, I got to get a shaman. Actually, I didn't start by saying I got to get a shaman. I said, I've got to get help. I need to find someone who's capable and equipped, has experience with this sort of strange stuff. And that actually took some searching. I did eventually locate this woman, Lorelei Hewitt. I don't think she would mind me mentioning her. She's wonderful. And she's a 30-year Buddhist practitioner in the lineage that I'm in, and she's also a shamanic healer. And when I contacted her, she was basically just the right person for this kind of thing. And I set up sessions with her. And initially, in working with me, she first wanted to determine if this presence, if this entity, whatever it was that was knocking on my psychic door, was what it was presenting itself to be, because she seemed to feel like there's a lot of deception, there's a lot of masquerading that goes on with this kind of phenomena. And so she spent some time determining to her satisfaction that it was what it was presenting itself to be, which is a mantis entity. And after that, she did some work with her guides and then said that it was clear to her that I should be the one to channel this mantis entity, not her, not her guides. She said she got a clear signal that I'm supposed to channel it.
And you've never done any channeling?
No way. You know, my opinion on channeling is, you know, I was pretty suspect about it. I wouldn't dismiss it entirely. It's not like I have a super strong negative opinion of it, but I also would never pursue it. And I've never done it. It's not an interest of mine at all. In fact, my upbringing as a child in the Lutheran church with a pretty fundamentalist Christian family made me feel, you know, deeply like some sort of atavistic fear about possession, I think, is what came up for me. So I was like, I don't think I want to channel a mantis entity. And she was like, I promise you, I'll show you how to do this in a way that's safe. We'll protect you. It's okay. And this is the most direct way for you to get the information you want. Because you can imagine, I had a list of questions. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, and I had compiled a whole diary around this, and I had many things that I wanted to know. And so she said, this is the most direct way to get those answers as you have them formulated. So she said, what we'll do is you'll write out your list of questions and you'll present that to me, and then I'm going to train you how to do the channeling, and then I will ask the mantis entity your questions when it's inhabiting you.
And you say to yourself, okay, let's channel the mantis.
It still sounds so nuts to me. And so we schedule the session, and I will report something that I never anticipated and I still cannot account for. But what happened physically was that as soon as she walked me through the protocols and I had begun channeling, I experienced like a strobe light, just like I was looking into the sun. If the sun was a strobe light, you know, if you held your eyes right up to a flashing light, but instead of in front of my face, it was like behind my eyelids, and my eyes started to water profusely. It was a very strong somatic experience, and that continued through the entire channeling session. So she, on her end, reported that the room glowed and I glowed, but she didn't see the same sort of exact strobing phenomena. So with that in place and that experience going on, she asked my questions, which were prepared ahead of time, to this mantis entity. And I finally got to have, I suppose, what approximates a conversation with whatever this intelligence is. And some of the first concerns I had, which were the obvious ones I think most of us would have, which, like, you know, am I being abducted by grays? Is there a whole host of unconscious trauma that I'm not aware of? Are you malevolent? Are you messing with my family? I was very worried about my kids. That was a big fear for me, was that my kids might be involved in this phenomena, and, you know, without their will or volition or permission. So I got all those questions out of the way, and the very first question that she asked was, do you agree to leave and never return if that's what Stuart wants? And the answer was a very clear yes, absolutely. If he doesn't want contact, there will be no more. And so that satisfied her to go on then to my questions. And my questions were the first ones that I had just related. And then going deeper, questions about what the nature of these entities' relationships is to, for instance, these insects. Why are all these insects showing up? What's the connection between the 8-foot-tall mantis entity and these little insects? And so, you know, based on your preferences, we can get into the detail of some of those responses. But generally, the shamanic intervention was the first release of pressure for me, where I started to feel some confidence and relaxation that there was not a negative entity or intelligence trying to intervene in my life, and that whatever this thing was, it was okay for me to try to communicate with it.
Well, let's talk about the prevalence of the insect showing up. Synchronicity on purpose. What did they say?
They said, or it said, I suppose, because I've still only seen one.
Right.
It said that they did in fact gift these mantis insects to the planet Earth tens of millions of years ago, and that they're kind of like they're a presence that these larger mantis entities, which come from a different dimension, they can temporarily inhabit these insects. And so they do use the insects as a signaling system on occasions. And for instance, in my experiences, they can manipulate them to create synchronicities. And so my initial suspicion, which became pretty much undeniable the more that the synchronicities began to unfold with other people, involving other people in the film, they said that, yes, that's orchestrated. That is a personal signaling and arrival that's meant to be an unmistakable, a very simple confirmation. It's like a form of confirmation, and they have a relationship with these insects, which I suppose you would suspect because of the physical similarity between the two big ones and little ones. But that's a question that I just thought was so obvious that even in doing my research on other people have had mantis encounters or the mantis's presence in the abduction phenomena, that was never accounted for, and I couldn't understand why. So that felt plausible to me, plausible enough to be satisfying that, you know, they do have a relationship with those insects.
And with the grays, too, there was a question about, because you've researched this, you know that it pops up, that the mantises are, in some abduction stories, are sort of the commander of other entities that we would call grays.
This is a big one for me. This was probably remains the thing that I have the most emotional charge around, which is, for me, I have one set of rules. And the set of rules is the same for humans as it is for non-human entities. I just feel like it's not okay to take people against their will and mutilate their bodies and transgress the sovereignty of the human being. And I feel like a lot of that is what goes on with some of these abduction phenomena. And so I didn't understand why the mantises are reported to be present among people experiencing that phenomena. And I was concerned, as you guessed, that, you know, I maybe had experience with grays that I wasn't aware of. And so the response that came back was, I'm not being abducted by Greys, but because the Mantis entities work with the Greys and because the Mantis entity is working with me, there's an overlap or a sympathetic resonance, which makes me feel like I understand or speak the language of people who have experiences with Greys, because there is a kind of overlay. There's some overlap among the various phenomena. And as to why, you know, because I was very pointed and I said, I don't understand why you're trafficking with these Greys and, you know, some of the unsavory experiences that people report. And the response that came back was, you know, we're not one homogenous thing. There are many, many kinds of mantises or mantid entities. They have all sorts of different roles. And your relationship with the one around the creativity and the art is one variety of that. And then there are other things that other types of mantis entities are doing. And they're basically, the response that came back was like, the mantis entities are so old and are such, you know, they're like founders or ancestors. They're one of the oldest entities. And so all variety of entities come to them to seek help. And the Greys came to them to seek help, and they basically don't turn anyone away. And then another little interesting note that came through on that thing was something to the effect of like, you should be happy that we work with the Greys, because if you don't like the Greys now, you should see them when they're not under our supervision, or something to that effect of like the spirit of it being, the Greys are much more behaved, or they're following the rules, or they're keeping their agreement with us. And so it kind of felt like, you know, we deal with everyone, and we deal with you around art, and we deal with the Greys around this other stuff. They have agendas and objectives they're trying to achieve, and you have yours, and they're two different things, but, you know, we deal with everyone. So that's what came back around that.
They also told you that there's an equilibrium between the mantis or mantids and humans. What does that mean?
A disequilibrium, actually, is what
disequilibrium came back
for, you know, this, the spirit of this point in this question was that, you know, because I had some guilt, I had some confusion and embarrassment and guilt around me not being able to go on the deck and, you know, maybe not being a very good partner in the relationship because of my fear and the paralyzing nature of that. And when they were responding to that, they made a point that it's much, much harder for them. Like, they exert 100 times more effort. They've got to come 100 times farther to meet me than I do to meet them. And the spirit of that was that they're not frustrated about that, but it would make things a lot easier if I cleaned up my vessel and basically learned to make my body a kind of relay station, which would facilitate communication, and that would be welcomed if I were up for doing that. There's some other things that were in the communication session, because it was long, that I didn't put in the doc. And that included some things like, you know, they recommended or requested, or it did, that I learned to do that, to learn to make myself a relay vessel for communication so that they could also have conversations with other people, and that I could, basically, they wanted me to channel more often and become a developed channel for them, which I have not done. I still feel, you know, as unmistakable as my experience was, and the strobe light and the great information that came through and the sense of resolve that I felt, I still feel very conflicted about even continuing with another second channeling session. So I have
we'll continue the conversation with Stuart Davis in a moment. Talking with Stuart Davis about Man Meets Mantis, his audio documentary, and a lifetime of experiences, or at least over the last few years, with these mantis type creatures. If you know your UFO literature, you know Linda Howe and John Carpenter, among others, have done some research with the people who've experienced close-up encounters with mantis-type creatures over the years. It's not exactly uncommon. Well, I guess in the big picture it's uncommon, but it's not unknown. When we come back, we'll talk to Stuart about what the final communications with this mantis entity was like, and then we'll take some of your calls and see if you've had similar experiences. We'll be right back. So, Stuart, I've been debating about whether to get into this topic, talking about your mantis synchronicities. And I don't know if this counts as one, but since you've told this story for the first time on this program with me, I'll share you with you a little bit of a story. I'm broadcasting tonight from my home, which is sort of a mantis sanctuary. It's a
What?
weird little story, but it started. I have never seen an 8 foot tall mantis, but I got a thing about, and my wife the same thing about these little inquisitive insects. So it started about 3 years ago. I'm out at the swimming pool and there's something floating in there. It looks like a piece of wood, and I scoop it out and realize it's an insect. Oh, it's a mantis. It looks like it maybe is dead, but I think, well, I'll put it over here in the shade. Maybe it revives itself. So an hour later, I come out, I open the door and head back out there, but at the doorstop, right in front of the door, not in the courtyard, but right at the door, is this mantis. And it's like standing there, like it's sitting there, like it's staring at the door, ready to come in. And I just swung the door open and chuckled and go, well, you're going to come on in or not? And damned if this mantis didn't walk across the doorstop and into the house. So I realized, well,
Oh,
thinking, well,
wow. That is
this is not a good
awesome.
place for this mantis to be. So I got a little piece of paper and scooped him up. We've got a raised flower bed where we grow mint and things like that for cooking, and it's very protected. So I put him in there and kind of wish him luck. And it's a couple weeks later, there's now three mantises in there. And by the fall, there had been five or six, and then they go away. And we didn't see them again till the next spring, when there's suddenly a dozen or more little baby mantises out there in this little flower bed. And it's now 3 years later, and we've got they got these little strips that they leave where they're like seed pods or something that they attach to the metal and the walls, and we're going to probably have several hundred mantises next spring when they pop out.
That's spectacular. I mean, wow, it's really the way you describe it at your doorstep is almost verbatim from one of the experiencers in the audio doc. You know, there's Eleanor Jenkins is one of the people who had a mantis synchronicity, and she lives in a big house in Beverly Hills. And the day she started working on mantis, when Siona, my producer, was on the way to Eleanor's house, Eleanor opened the door, and there was, in fact, a praying mantis on her doorstep, right in front of the door. And that's what you're describing. Like, it's basically announcing itself, like, "Hey, I'm coming in. I'm going to come up." That's exactly what she was saying. It was hilarious to her. She'd never seen one before, and her doorway was on this vast terracotta, you know, not an environment mantises would usually go. So that's got to be auspicious, I would think, that they love you so much.
Well, I don't know. I hope so. But anybody who comes here sees them, and we make sure that no gardeners or anybody goes anywhere near that. They're supposed to leave that area alone. So they've got a nice little lush area where they seem to be pretty happy.
Well, I'll tell you what, like, maybe we can get some of your mantises from the large 100 population of them when we film this spring. We are going to need a lot of mantis insects, so I'll circle back and see if maybe we can have some brought and put in the film. Maybe they could be movie stars.
All right, I'll let you know when they start popping out again. We're going to
Okay.
take a couple of calls. Let's see. We're going to go to Jay in Los Angeles, who says he's had an experience of his own. Hey, Jay.
Hey, it's a real honor, longtime listener. And for some reason, tonight's the lucky night I get through, because I've never been able to get through before. I think that I had a very similar experience. I was being filmed by this friend of mine who does a lot of documentaries, and I was basically telling him about a whole nother interesting story, nothing to do with UFOs, nothing to do with praying mantis. And at the end of it, I said, "You know, I had a really strange dream. I think it was a dream last night." And I started telling about this confrontation that I had with this large praying mantis. And the thing that I wanted to ask your guest is, did he? I distinctly got the feeling that this mantis, which was huge, because it did tower over me. I'm not sure how, but probably maybe 7 feet tall. At the end of my confrontation, as I was being filmed, I said I actually wanted to smack her, and my friend Stassi said, "You wanted to smack her?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "But she wouldn't let me." In other words, mentally, she had a stranglehold on me, so that I couldn't actually do anything of that sort. And I'm not somebody that hits women. I don't hit women. But this had a very large proboscis, especially compared to the rest of the body. And I was being controlled in, like, I'm sorry, I forgot the gentleman's name, but your guest said, I felt fear and I felt embarrassment.
The guest is Stuart Davis, and Stuart, it rings a bell, I would guess, what Jay is describing.
I mean, it rings a bell, particularly with a friend of mine. So one of the things that came, you know, when you have a mantis experience and you start researching, you meet other people who have had mantis encounters. That happened for me. And one of the most surprising ones was a friend of mine who I've known for 15 years. He had a mantis encounter back before I knew him, and it was also in Colorado, about 200 miles from where mine took place. And Jay, what you're describing is much more in line with what my friend Bobby recounted, which was he woke up 3:30 in the morning, paralyzed, unable to move his body, 7-foot-tall mantis over him. And he described that this mantis was basically taking core samples. It didn't have an instrument. It wasn't coring him with an instrument, but he said that this mantis was somehow taking samples from his subtle or causal bodies. Was there another component to your experience with that mantis? Like, what was the purpose? Or if you could
check in for an implant, possibly in my ear. The gentleman who did it, who used to work with John Lear, said, "No, I don't. You know, I don't see anything, but I still feel it. I still feel like this some kind of a little lump, little, you know, implant, similar to what you were saying, but yours sounded a lot larger. Mine's kind of small."
And that's the only experience that you consciously remember?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the thing that was so weird is the fact that the incident just popped up when I was talking to this friend of mine who does, like I said, filming and documentaries. And because I don't recall any abduction, I don't exactly remember how I got there. But like you were saying, if I felt so much, very kind of clear about it afterwards, that it actually had happened. And that was the part that really got me. But I don't remember a UFO. I don't remember being abducted, but I remember being captive in that room. And in talking to a mantis, I mean, that is just so bizarre in itself. And she was only like 4 or 5 feet away.
You said she.
You know, that was what I was going to ask you. Yeah. Why I thought it was she, I don't know. And I wanted to ask you, was yours a she also?
My impression would tilt more toward the female, but I didn't quite have that super powerful distinction on the gender of it, but I would probably tilt toward female, yeah.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. John Carpenter had written about some experiences with mantises, and they were positive and inquisitive, he described them, as I recall, they were female, and I don't know if all of them tend to be female or the ones who talk to humans are female or... that'd be an interesting question. First-time caller, Wes. I'm sorry. Do you have a thought on that, Stuart?
No, just that, what this reminds me of is the craziest, for me, synchronicity of the entire thing was what you hear at the end of the doc, which is in my research of trying to find other people who've had mantis experiences, I learned of this woman named Jacqueline Smith, who was speaking at the 2016 UFO conference, and she was visited by mantis entities on New Year's Eve. Absolutely bizarre and inexplicable, but I called her up. Hers showed up at 12 noon, and mine showed up at 12 midnight.
First-time caller, Wes in Massachusetts. Hi, Wes. Good morning.
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I've had a lot of paranormal experiences since my dog passed away. But I do want to say, when I was 6 years old, I couldn't bend my middle finger on my left hand. So I was taken to the hospital to see why. And there was a needle in my finger. And I don't know how it got there, but it was taken out. Nothing was said, you know. And I actually looked up what kind of implants they put inside you. And it happens to be a needle. And I have had, since my dog passed away, I wondered if the dog soul would come back to the house. So I Googled it, and it said take pictures where the dog was. You know, it would always be his favorite spots. And I started videoing, and taking pictures where he would be, and there he was in the hallway. And that's where my paranormal started. And what astonished me was the time that you said was 3:33 in the morning, because a lot of the times this is when I'm catching the paranormal. So now we have a three-family home. It's a family house, and I live on the third floor. So at that time, 3:33 in the morning, I was videoing, and I snapped pictures at the same time. And I had this entity in a window in the kitchen, and I got three pictures of it, and it doesn't look like it's from this world. And what astonished me was it went dark. It went from glowing the head to going completely dark. And then it showed itself to me. It was a little dark, but I could see the outline of the head in the window still. And I've had other paranormal experiences. I took a picture of the mirror, and I got an old man looking at me through the mirror. And another time I come out of the shower, I have a lot of orbs. And I wasn't sure if this was real, so I had said out loud, if this is real, then touch me. And I have also a picture of the orb touching my left pinky.
Hey, Wes, I appreciate you sharing the stories with us. It's a little awful where we're headed with the mantis, but thank you for calling in. We're going to go west of the Rockies, east of the Rockies to Denver in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes, this is Denver. Thanks for letting me come on. But I had experience with a praying mantis in 2004. Can you hear me?
Yes. Share it with us, please.
Okay, the reason I had so much respect for this praying mantis, I was reading Riley Martin's book, The Coming of Ten. He said those aliens that told him that there was two other intelligences on Earth besides man, the praying mantis and the dolphin. So that way I had a lot of respect for the praying mantis. I worked at this nuclear plant in South Carolina, and two of my coworkers wanted to kill this praying mantis. The praying mantis was inside the nuclear plant killing insects, capturing small insects. So I would not let them kill the praying mantis because I knew that was a form of intelligence. It was about 5 inches tall, and they would have had to fight me, but they weren't going to do that, you know. And so when I stopped them from killing the praying mantis spoke to me telepathically and said, thank you. This is 2004 in Darlington, South Carolina.
Denver, thank you for sharing that story. You know, Stuart, for you, you had an explosion of creative output right after this thing, after this saga played
massive.
Out.
Yes.
And how did it manifest itself? Meaning what? Albums? And
well, yeah, it's, you know, I think that's a very interesting point to keep returning to, because out of all of the confusing liminal peripheral, you know, altered states, and a lot of these phenomena are hard to tell what kind of ontological status they have. Are they real? Are they from the imagination? But the thing that's concrete that I really do have and know is, you know, it's tangible, it's in my hands, is the artwork. And so, you know, those three scripts and also story Bibles that came with them, you know, I wrote 1,000 pages of scripted films about this relationship between this large mantis entity and this, this victim of human trafficking. And that plus many paintings, you can see videos of the mantis paintings that I've done, which are constructed in this language called Is, which is an art language I created. Music, much music. The last 5 years of my life have been entirely devoted to creating artwork that is inspired by and informed by the 60-second experience with this entity. I mean, if you think of what kind of expansion and amplification the creativity undergoes from that short of a visit, I think it's astonishing. It's been really powerful. And that part is unmistakably positive. It's been very, very wonderful.
You think about the reports that people who have encounters with unknown beings or entities, the different shapes and forms that they are reported. And you're never quite sure whether it's a screen memory or it's a hallucination or they're actually reporting accurately what these creatures or entities or beings look like. You think about Kerry Mullis, Nobel Prize winning biochemist. He had an encounter with a glowing green raccoon, I think. He later wins the Nobel Prize for figuring out the DNA sequence. You have to wonder whether he had some help along the way. And you also have to wonder what they really look like. You know, did they really look like glowing green raccoons or mantises or what?
Well, it's a great question, and actually one that came up in the, I worked with another second shaman recently, one who's local to me that I could see in person. And one of the things that she had me do when I was doing more work with this mantis entity was ask it to show me itself in its true form, not as I perceive it, but as it actually is, independent of my interpretation. And when I did that, the mantis became transparent and translucent, and then it collapsed to a sphere, and the sphere was like an electric, almost like a Tesla coil of this vivid purple. It was one of the most spectacularly beautiful things I've ever seen, and that was apparently, you know, in that context, that was its true appearance, not my interpretation. So, and then she said, you know, you can tell it, you can, if you want to see it as a mantis, that's fine. But if you want to see it as it actually is, it does it have a preference either way? And, you know, the mantis response was basically, no, it's however you want to see it is fine. This is its true nature. So I don't know. I don't know what all of that means. I mean, it was an experience, but I agree that it's an interesting question. The masquerade, the reality behind the appearances is not always in direct correspondence to what the appearance is.
You anticipate an ongoing relationship, if you can?
I do. Now I'm at a point, you know, which is part of why we're talking tonight, is that I feel clear enough that the relationship is positive. The artwork has been fruitful. My creativity has benefited from it. I certainly don't want to project my own experience onto everyone else. I know a lot of people have negative experiences. I don't have explanations for that. I don't want negative experiences. I don't really want any other entities to enter into the mixture, but I'm at a point where I'm okay to continue exploring it, which is why I started working with another shaman who's in Colorado. And I think I will gradually, very slowly, very cautiously take baby steps toward deepening the relationship.
I'll stay in touch with you about next spring and what happens out in the garden. Thanks, Stuart Davis. It was a great fun.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
All right, we'll be in touch. And check out Man Meets Mantis. We have the link on the Coast website. Thanks also to Josh Bloom, Dr. Josh Bloom, an earlier guest, and to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio and Donna Walker, Dan Galante, our webmaster Lex Lonehood, and producer Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be next Sunday night with special guests Jeremy Corbell and Bob Lazar. Good night.